Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I am Ken Napsok.
And this is the Clone Wars Report.
Bum, 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 bum.
It has now segued from fun little news to ominous drums.
Yes. Deal, no deal. The crisis of the deal.
Yes, deal, no deal. Definitely deserves big, dramatic drums. We are very excited to continue to get the opportunity to even be talking about the Clone Wars, because, of course, it has returned for Season 7. We are on Episode 6. We were halfway through this 12-episode arc. A season. It's not an arc. It's a season.
Seems like.
And we're halfway through this 4-episode arc. There are too many numbers for this time of day. Anyway, as you said, this episode is called Deal, No Deal. We've been having a lot of fun with these titles. A lot of them have sounded like songs. This one sounded more to me like James Bond was hosting like a game show or something.
I have been loving the kind of modern pop culture references with some of the titles and the play on words. And, you know, they've had a lot of great titles in Clone Wars, but I enjoyed this.
Deal. Why did Deal, No Deal speak to you?
Just even right from the start, when you see it listed on the screen at Disney Plus, I just started laughing. It just put me in a good mood. And this is not necessarily a happy-go-lucky episode, but I was just like, ah, yeah, we've got a deal, or do we not have a deal? Let's get into this one. And then also, you know, figured going to go into some underworld fun. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you, as a fan of Las Vegas, just lit up at Deal No Deal.
Too easily.
Too easily. All right. Well, let's get into Deal No Deal. What was your big overall reaction?
Man, I got to tell you something. I love this episode. And I've been loving this arc. And it is a little slower. It's a little more character-based. And I think that's some of the big things in in Clone Wars history, that some of the bigger episodes are the smaller ones to me. The real character studies, the studies of the galaxy and what's going on and what you can learn from them, more than the big action. And I love the big action stuff. So I've been just enjoying this more than I thought I would, if that makes sense. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Just like, I'm in it. And I'm just enjoying everything this episode did to paint an even deeper picture of the lower levels versus the upper levels and the differences there. The stuff going on Kessel, I just got really excited about. And again, just a good, deeper look at just Ahsoka and what her point of view is now compared to what it might have been and where it will go.
Okay, wow. Yeah, so all the character stuff just really, really hooked you and grabbed you, and you did not care that there was very little to no action.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, it's a talkie.
It is. There is sound and everything. Yeah. No singing, sadly, but maybe we'll get there. Yeah. For me, I was really struck by that. Yep, this is a little bit of a middle chapter of an episode, and like event wise, I did feel like maybe like we could have gotten a little bit farther. It'll be interesting to see the next chapter and we'll talk about it. But it felt to me a little bit pacing wise, just the number of events that maybe we could have got to kind of the next thing that happens after the tractor beam at the end. So for me, a little bit of pacing sluggishness, but all of that is made up for by the fact that there is really great and interesting character development and theme stuff that we'll talk about, and one or two kind of great mind-blowing moments, heart-blowing, I guess I would say, heart-blowing moments. and then the visuals of it, right? It felt like, yep, this is a character episode where Ahsoka is being developed, but also Trace and Rafa and all sort of themes of family and trust and blah, 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 that we'll talk about. But it also just seemed like Dave Filoni saying the tradition of Star Wars and Clone Wars in particular is watching ships come in over environments for landings, and our graphics are awesome. So we are just going to blow you away with the visuals of these environments.
It's a lot of land in Star Wars animated shows, isn't there? A lot of great landing.
Yeah, and this was some high-end landing, right? I mean, Kessel, you had the thrill of, oh, it's Kessel, but then some different parts of Kessel, but it looked beautiful. You know, even Coruscant from a distance looked beautiful, all sorts of stuff there. Mm. I think it was also affected, because I watched it the first time late at night, and I enjoyed it, and I thought about it and all those things. Then when I rewatched it this morning, I think I put my finger on what I was trying to figure out about why it felt a little bit different is that I think Ahsoka's perspective is definitely there, and she's still struggling with what does it mean to be kind of a Jedi, not a Jedi. Mm. But this is really Trace and Rafa's story.
Yeah.
Trace and Rafa are the ones who are actually learning things. Ahsoka is just reacting and making a few choices, but she isn't going from, at the beginning of this episode, I believe X. Now I've been challenged. At the end of this episode, I have this new perspective. Right. She hasn't got there in this arc yet. And it's Trace and Rafa who are learning that all of these things they think are not correct. And Ahsoka's kind of there to go, hey, you guys are in your fantasy world, and I'm trying to tell you about reality.
Yeah, there was not a role reversal, but for Trace, who was kind of, it's definitely world weary and street smart and all those kind of things we've learned in the previous episode. But then all of a sudden now kind of like, I left the air brake on. I need a license. Like I liked some of that, but it was, there's a lot of that world learning going on.
Yeah. A whole lot of learning. So let's dive into what we think the big themes were. For me, I was kind of wrestling with how to say it, but in terms of kind of traditional Star Wars themes, I felt like this was a lot about very core idea of taking your first steps into a larger world and just, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, becoming an adult. The lessons that George Lucas wanted you to hear when you were 12.
Right.
That seems like that's what a lot of what is going on in this episode, particularly from Trace's perspective.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. Yeah, I definitely think it's there, especially when she's talking about, you know, we get they have to survive on their own and no choice to do it any other way. But still, like I said, yeah, taking that larger step and just the look on her face, even on just the hyperspace moment, stood out to me of like literally first time she's done this, literally going out into a larger world.
Yeah, yeah. So literally a larger galaxy. Yeah. So there are so many moments that kind of reinforced that of, you know, Trace claiming that she's this great pilot and it's in that the ship is the fastest ever. And then we learn that she's never really flown anything outside of a speeder before, never been to hyperspace, doesn't even have a license, doesn't know that licenses are a thing. And Trace overall, I feel like it seems very much a choice from the creators that she is a different perspective on Han. Because she has a lot of Han-specific things, right down to dumping the spice. But like, yeah, I'm a great pilot. You need me. I got the fastest ship in the galaxy. And we're used to Han having that. He is kind of like 30% bluster, 70% can back it up.
Yeah.
And Trace is just kind of, she's heard other people say these things, you know, but she hasn't actually taken that step into a larger world. She isn't an adult. She hasn't experienced these things.
Yeah, that's because there's the line about her when she's talking about her parents separating, going away. I forget the exact quote, but yeah, it reminded me of that too. And another look of not the Republic's. Well, I mean, it's a little bit look at the Republic, but what becomes the Empire? We always talk about the oppression of the Empire, destroying industry, destroying families, and that's part of the what's going on. To see it already in place in the Republic, you know, that's got to open up Ahsoka's eyes a bit too. So I like that they're drawing apart upon that. And I like what you're talking about. She's got a lot of bluster because she's heard the bluster.
Yeah. And I, that line about her parents too, when I watched it this morning, I had forgot that there was this kind of significant pause, this ellipsis where she says, you know, we got this after my parents split.
Yeah.
So you can interpret it a lot of different ways. And even that feels like to me, like a tie to Han as a symbol of the sort of orphan story of a mysterious orphan. We don't know exactly where his parents were.
Right.
And Trace and Rafa seem to be following that tradition too.
Definitely works for me there. There's just something wonderful. There's some, just a lot of charm with Trace and Rafa too. I was going to point out the animation and the voice acting on these two characters has been really just top notch, very modern looking. There's a lot of expressions, you know, you go back to season one in Clone Wars and that was one of the things, just kind of the style hadn't, you know, the technology hadn't supported the drive and goals of the creators. Now it has, and just a lot of great looks and moments, and Trace just kind of that beams through it to me with some charisma of looking at the bigger world.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there is a level of sass that was not technologically possible, and a level of emotion. There's that moment where Ahsoka kind of, when Rafa is challenging Ahsoka, and Ahsoka kind of gives her, kind of puts her hand on her hip and gives her like a look up and down. Like, I think that level of sass was not technologically possible at the beginning of Clone Wars, which is really cool to see.
Yeah.
For me, for Rafa, for this sort of theme of stepping into the larger world and becoming an adult, you know, Rafa is the older sister and the one who, you know, at least seems to claim to know how 1313 works and how big real business works. But we get this great contrast between like, yeah, I know how the world works. I've dealt with people like Pintu, you know, epic gangster Pintu. And then as this episode goes on, we get to see through some of that great animation that allows more subtlety where she is starting to realize, oh, wow, like a galactic level gangster leading a massive crime syndicate that is too big for the Republic to put down. Yeah. That's real different than, you know, little time Pinto.
Yeah. Yeah. The local street tough versus the Godfather.
Yeah, yeah, and there's something about that I really like that speaks to that
taking your first steps to being an adult, where like you can kind of relate to that, where you're a kid and you're like, if you understand how high school works, you know the ins and outs, and you think, I know people, I know how this works, I understand power structures, I understand cliques. And then you go to college or you go to your first job and you're like, oh damn, no.
Yeah.
The world is bigger and more complicated and higher stakes than I thought. And I really felt that from Rafa.
Yeah, I love that you said this is it's the first steps into a larger world for all of them, and in a way, Ahsoka's been doing that of going outside what she knew in the Jedi Order and kind of seeing things again. I call her a little more world knowledgeable, street knowledgeable in her own way. But yeah, I like that. That's kind of a lesson for all of them right now.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on with the Ahsoka. I think what I really liked about Ahsoka is she is the knowledgeable one, you know, to the point where they ask her, how do you know all this stuff? Which is a great moment. But it was really interesting in terms of Ahsoka kind of, it's not taking a first step, it's taking a different step into a larger world where she is totally knowledgeable about all this stuff, but experiencing it for the first time without the resources of the Jedi or the Republic. And I felt that last week a little bit, but it's different for her to like go, okay, well, I'm kind of trying to hold back. I could absolutely kick everybody's ass. I could kick Pinto's ass 8,000 times without breaking a sweat and all of his thugs. And then she's like, well, Kessel and the Pike Syndicate and slavery and Zygerians, like, yeah, I can deal with all of this with a squadron of clones and permission from the High Council and, you know, an order from the Republic. But here I am knowing how big the threat is, and I'm kind of just out here alone.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of maturity.
Different kind of step. Yeah, I like that. And without the not just the protection, but the maybe ingrained beliefs, kind of stepping out from underneath those and not necessarily changing your belief, but changing how you interpret them or how you apply your own, you know, personal experiences to those beliefs. Pretty powerful stuff. This is some really interesting adventures for Ahsoka that I wouldn't expect going into the season. I think we were all focused on, at least I was, Siege of Mandalore, Ahsoka the Powerful. Now they got Ahsoka the has taken a step, and I like it.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, it's kind of played for an element of comedy, but when she is coming up, trying to come up with the plan of what to do with the spice and suggests, you know, turning it, giving it to somebody who actually make it into medicine.
Yeah.
And then has to kind of retreat and go, I was thinking in ethical terms, it wasn't a plan. That it's a fun moment. It's a high stakes moment, but it's also really interesting in terms of her relationship with the Jedi, where she's sort of declared, I don't think you guys are following your beliefs. Oh, but now I'm out here on my own and I have to make these ethical and tactical decisions for myself. Yeah. And like probably when she's visited, you know, if she has faced a problem like this before, she wouldn't had to personally make a choice, right? As much, because she would have gone there on a mission with specific objectives. And she still has her own morality and her own empathy within that. But she's got Anakin and the Council and the Republic to say, we have decided that X needs to happen on Kessel, and you are an instrument of that.
Yeah, I love that. I love this, you know, this kind of structure in place, leadership in place, just a tradition in place. And even though some of the things that a lot of the things the Jedi are going to do are going to be in line with Ahsoka's heart, to have that kind of power, but now that power's in your hand, like, and now you know by going, well, let's give it to someone. They'll do something with it. Might not be the safest plan right away, and you have to deal with that in a different way. I think that's a really interesting way to look at it and how Ahsoka's learning outside of the Jedi box.
Yeah, yeah. And we will definitely talk about the super important trying to enter the wrong flight path lane, just because there's so many great things about that. But to me, that was almost like a way to make what Ahsoka's feeling is literal of like, I can't go in that lane anymore. Is like a really literal version of, I am not in line with the military, with the Jedi. I got to take the civilian route, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think the wonderful real world examples we all might have, no matter what line of work you've been in. You know, you're walking into your old place of work. Like, that's not, I can't anymore. Even if I wanted to, I can't.
Yeah. When I walked back into Kinko's and couldn't go behind the desk to make copies, it was just like Ahsoka Tano.
That's exactly.
Yeah. I know you worked for a long time as mall security. Are you ever tempted to make a citizen's arrest at the mall?
No, but I'll walk around and I've seen things, and my old boss used to do this too. And he'd come by like, "Hey man, I'm up at another mall and I'm watching a organized retail ring work right now. And I'm thinking of getting involved." And be like, "Well, just call you eat your hot dog. You can't now."
Eat your hot dog.
Also
a good lesson. Maybe that'll be the moral of our episode. The other sort of theme that jumped out at me is this idea, of fantasy versus reality. And it kind of goes in hand in hand with taking your first step into a larger world, but it seemed like it was really highlighted how many times the characters thought things would be this, kind of more romantic, mythical, exciting, beautiful version. And then they realize it's this kind of, encrusted, perhaps caught up in, you know, the mechanics of people being not them best selves and just sort of a little bit darker reality than the fantasy.
What? Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite moments was Rafa kind of actually sitting at that table with on Kessel and all right, well, I've got to learn to say some of these things, right? I got to say, you know, and again, the actual real world, oops, you're here. Fun to watch, not necessarily fun to experience, but fun to watch.
Yeah. I thought a lot of it happened on Kessel, but I even think that kind of the fantasy versus reality starts with the Silver Angel, right? And without the episode doesn't give us any evidence that it's an amazing ship. Patrice is like fastest ship ever. And I think even the fact that it's called Silver Angel and they kind of poke fun at her about it, it sounds like a kid's name for a perfect spaceship. And then the reality is, you know, it's a fine spaceship. You don't know how to fly it. You know, you don't know how to turn the brake.
Yeah. But I don't know if I've ever seen that in canon before. I do like the idea that the X-Wings have an air brake. You got to get that off. Yeah. I love, for some reason, it's like, I don't know, naming a sword before it's earned its name. You know, just kind of, okay. Sure. Okay. Needle. Got it.
Yeah. Didn't Joffrey do that?
Widow's Whale. Exactly. Yeah. He never earned that.
No. So you were touching on with some of the Rafa stuff. For me, the fantasy versus reality was a lot of it was built up around Kessel. This idea that it seemed like Rafa knew that she was doing something shady.
Yeah.
But was involved with like the higher end of shady, and like the fact that we go to this forested area of Kessel. So we go to a literal verdant, beautiful forest with a beautiful castle where they can work with the king. It's literal, actual fantasy where, and Ahsoka's like, no, we're not playing. This isn't fantasy. You're not working for a king. Oh, look over here. Slaves.
Yeah. I just recently rewatched it for Billy Patterson's show Hot Takes. I just watched Temple of Doom, and it is almost beat for beat some of the stuff. fancy palace, royalty, big dinner, no snake surprise, but then just the underbelly, what's going on there, and certain characters having to learn, confirming what they might already suspect, or some just kind of being exposed to it for the first time. That worked well for me, you know, and it kept, like I said, the fantasy versus reality trope. It's all right there. But I just love seeing that side of Kessel.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's great. The other thing I kind of wanted to ask you about is, I know my brain tends toward the meta, but in a way this again seemed like, whether Filoni is doing it on purpose or not, a little bit of a meta conversation about Star Wars, because the original trilogy and the people who grew up with that is a little bit more fantasy. In the original trilogy, you don't hear about things like Holo News. Government is implied, but it's way off, out of focus. You can really just watch it as Luke Skywalker is a Jedi Knight. Leia is a damsel in distress who can save herself. Han is the charming rogue who learns to become a knight. And it's all... It can all really lean into. It's the mythic in the fantasy, and you don't want too many real world details in Star Wars because it's about the fantasy. And then you get into the prequels, and in fact, the entire Clone Wars era, and I would argue in general, modern Star Wars, and you care about things like that this episode cares about, like, you know, exactly how are people paying for things? Oh, spice can be turned into both a medicine or a, you know, an illegal narcotic. Which lanes are you allowed to fly in? Do you have a star pilot license? And it gets into a more modern era of Star Wars, where Star Wars has, in order to tell its stories, it has a lot of the just sort of the less fantastic machinery of real life.
Love that you said that. I love that it's such, I think that ties into a lot of things we talk about here, and this thing we've been on. And definitely, I've been pounding my fist, unfortunately, on other shows recently. Of just the Star Wars is not about the how and the what. It's more about the why. Why does this happen? Why does that character come back? Why does that thing there? And I'm glad you, and without a doubt, it the prequels. George was starting that himself. I don't think he could have done the original trilogy any other way, right? Antithesis to what was going on in the 70s and the Chinatowns and the French Connections and all those serious movies in the time we're in. We needed the surface, and it's not even the surface, it's deep stuff. But I love that even George was like, cool, great. Now let's challenge those things we have, those challenges that we believe as fans with some reality underneath it. Tarkin says Palpatine swiped the Senate away, and it's a 1 second line. Now here's what that means. Here's all the people behind that. I love that, and I think I don't think you're wrong, because Filoni's got that side to him, you know, kind of like, hey, here's what's going on. You like Kessel? Cool. Here's some stuff. Here's some real stuff to it.
Yeah. I think I really like that, because it ties in Star Wars. It's still fantasy, right? I mean, we watch everything in this episode, and we see exotic aliens and bizarre worlds, and you know, spice is still a strange and exotic space fantasy thing. But at the same time, you get to have this joy of Rafa and Trace, more Trace, seeing things from an original trilogy perspective of like, oh, a king in a castle. And then the real world in Ahsoka's like, no, drug lords, supply lines, practical solutions. And there's something joyful to me about that, making that friction a reality of the characters in Star Wars.
This might tie with going back to, we were talking about last week about the 1313 stuff, and how I do love 1313 as this fabled, you know, cult followed a level of Star Wars, or this area of Star Wars with cool bounty hunters, and it's dark and gritty, and it's like a first act of a Batman movie. But and I love, because I love that, and I love that, and I'd still love to play that game. I'd still love to have a show based around that. But the fact that they were like, cool, that thing, you know, here's the direction we're going with it. Here's some of the real building blocks to this greater story, which ties to all parts of Star Wars. I like that choice. So I'm glad you brought that up. It does really work on that level in this episode.
Awesome. So talking big picture about this episode, the moral. So the moral this week was, mistakes are valuable lessons often learned too late. How did that grab you?
As someone who makes mistakes daily, I love when you really break it down, to not forget that your mistakes, and this is not even almost about Star Wars, but to not forget that the mistakes you make, look at them as those valuable lessons just learned a little bit later, and not to beat yourself up about them, and to adapt and move on from them. Hell, maybe even Palpatine does that. Let's not take too many lessons from Palpatine. But you know what I mean? Like, so that sets up this episode where you're like, things ain't going to go good, and things never go good in Star Wars, right? Han's the king of mistakes. His butt always lands in butter, but I like, this is why I'm interested to see, you know, it's such a two-parter. And you're right, the ending is rather abrupt, but how they apply lessons from these is interesting to me.
You're right. This moral really highlights that these characters are learning lessons, perhaps too late, but can they apply them in the third and fourth episodes of the arc? Yeah. Man, when I saw that come on, I think there's a part of me that would totally expect, you know, mistakes are just lessons we can learn. Something like that, I would expect. Mm-hmm. The fact that they add often learned too late. I literally, you know, was up at 12:30 at night with my whiskey, is an older middle-aged person. And I just said out loud, too real, man, too real.
Youth is wasted on the young, and Star Wars lessons are wasted on the young, right? Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, but just the too late, you know, you can still go back and apply them, but
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you this sort of philosophical question because it did inspire me this the moral of this episode. Do you think that you have to personally experience things to truly learn them? To spin that out just a little bit. I mean, a part of it is Ahsoka has the knowledge, and if people listened, they could maybe avoid these mistakes. But that's part of taking a step in the larger world that Trace, in particular, Rafa a little bit too, have to make these mistakes for themselves. Do you think that's true in real life?
100% true. This idea of you might understand it from afar, and you might never get super close to it, but just that allows you getting close to things, seeing it and then feeling it might not completely change your worldview, but it might at least give you pause to think about the whole picture and different ways to approach scenarios and situations. I think there are different ways to approach things, but when you feel it and you understand it, it's hopefully breeds compassion, empathy, but also just how to navigate the waters a little bit better, how to navigate through some of the bigger things in life. And that happens all the time. And that kind of learning should never change, never stop in your life. And for Ahsoka, to put it to Ahsoka, again, she was trained. She's had a lot of things ingrained into her. She's got this great heart, and none of that goes away. None of that means the Jedi, like we've talked about, none of that means the Jedi have it wrong. It's just now she's down on the ground on her own and having to learn and see it and experience it. Now she fully understands what some of the decisions or non-decisions by the Jedi Order cause. I like
that. Yeah, that's great, because that moral of mistakes are valuable lessons often learned too late can feel like it's really directed at Trace's big spice dumping decision. Right. But it is great to put it into Ahsoka's perspective as well. Mm. Yeah, mm. I think it. The reason I thought of that question partially is, you know, I have an older brother, and when I was young, he would go, "Hey, I already made that mistake, so I can tell you it's a bad thing. Don't do it." And I remember as a teen, like, some of them were like fun things. And like, I don't want to know that.
Right.
I want to find out for myself. I wonder if Ahsoka ever feels the way I did with her big brother, Anakin.
Skywalker Academy.
In our first section of the podcast, we talk about the big picture stuff. We leave time to talk about the action, because there's so much action in Clone Wars, except for not a lot in these last two episodes, and almost not at all in this episode.
I mean, Jedi mind trick. Some spice was dumped.
Yeah, the closest thing that I could get to action is when the Pike Majordomo Fife shot the lock open.
Right.
Because I thought that we had gone through this episode with no lightsabers and no blasters being fired, but one blaster was fired.
One blaster, yeah. And an air brake left on.
that is a big action moment. And I take it from your comments at the top that you're totally fine with that. You're fine with there being an episode or even an arc of Clone Wars with less action.
I absolutely am. And you talked about it when we were going through the Bad Batch stuff, which had some spectacular action. So, and again, what pulled me into Clone Wars was some of the early stuff and going, oh, this is some cool Star Wars fighting. And I like Star Wars fighting. I just sometimes do think I have a tendency to tune out when some of the action's going on in shows, movies. This goes to some of the, not, I want to say issues with Marvel. I enjoy every Marvel movie I see, but sometimes the fighting starts and I literally just shut down and I go, I'll emerge when the story starts again. And it doesn't mean that the creators aren't putting decisions in those fights, because as a good writer, you're supposed to, as you know. And so it doesn't mean I want my Clone Wars episodes to be my dinner with, you know, Andre style stuff here. I just like it for overall pacing in the series, that I can sit down and this one can just kind of be like, oh, let me listen to the sentences, not wait for, Wrecker to go wreck shop.
Yeah, that would have been pretty amazing if Wrecker just ran through, or we just cut to a random scene of Wrecker smashing something to keep the action up. Yeah. I'm with you. I feel like there has been variety throughout the whole history of Clone Wars, and there certainly have been episodes with less action, you know, that's mostly political, and then Padme will get off a few shots from a blaster and things like that.
In the middle of a meeting.
I'm making a point here, Bail. Pew, 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 right at the ceiling. I think there's a part of Ahsoka is a character that we do associate with thoughtfulness and empathy in that, but she's one of the badasses of Star Wars. So there's this hunger to see her fully unleashed. But I think there was a pleasure in feeling like there's this sort of danger in this episode that it could have erupted into violence, and Ahsoka is probably really, really, really wanting to avoid that.
And look, when she finally, or if she explodes and because, you know, fully uses her skills or whatever and wields a blade again, it's going to mean a hell of a lot more, I would think, I would hope, and I think it will.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good build up to have this action packed episode where the air brake is left on and the lock is blasted that's open.
Right. That's the episode in a nutshell. Great stuff. we forgot. We left the air brake on.
Well, we are going to take our air brake off and take a break, and then we will be back on the air in just a moment for the Clone Wars Report Part 2.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
are back for more Clone Wars Report. In this second half of the show, we dive into all the details of the episode, just kind of going in order. And there are a lot of really great, juicy details in this episode, so I'm excited to dig in. So let's just start at the beginning here, Ken. So Trace and Ahsoka are repairing the ship. One of the fun details is that Trace asks about exactly where Ahsoka, what academy she went to learn all this. And Ahsoka says, Skywalker Academy. Go ahead. Let's talk about that a little bit. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, fun. I know a lot of people loved when she said brother last week. So it's a fun nod. But my thought, this is my one, not a negative, but like my brain went to like, well, what if Anakin was so famous that Trace was like, the Jedi?
I went through the exact same thought process because, you know, some Clone Wars material kind of describes the Jedi as like they get featured on the Holo News. He's a big hero. But I kind of took it as down on 1313, like they don't want to hear that dumb Holo News propaganda about hero Jedi. Oh, did you retake Geonosis for the 18th time? Big hero Jedi?
Big hero.
Yeah. But I like the look on Ahsoka's face afterwards where it couldn't tell if it's like just sort of sadness or kind of bummed that she can't quite, you know, come up with something else there.
Of all the things I said that.
We find that Trace and Rafa's parents, dramatic pause, split. How did you take that?
I'm not saying it. I didn't take it as a classic divorce. And then I took it as problems, but both left for whatever reason. But also I didn't trust that it was just on the straight up and up, that it could have been something related to criminal in the world or anything like that. Maybe we'll find out. I don't think we will. I think it's just a little detail in the past to get us where we are now with these characters. But I didn't necessarily, like I said, I think I made a joke earlier, but I didn't necessarily take like, cool, mom and dad, Kramer versus Kramer, custody battle. But just the fact that they don't even want to talk about it. She can't talk about it. You know, it doesn't want to hurt. So whatever happened. But they aren't around. They aren't able to be around.
Yeah. I like that a lot because I felt like split was like the word she was looking for that could have meant, yeah, they left the planet or one of them's dead or they split to prison.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really thought about it before, but it's nice to see this scene where, you know, Ahsoka and Trace are bonding. And then I didn't even mean to do this, but these two details I picked out to talk about are them kind of both being willing to only tell each other half truths.
Yeah.
Because the way she says split is the same way Ahsoka's like, Skywalker Academy.
Yeah, man. You got to, you know, both these characters have good reason to keep their guard up. And maybe when they finally let it down in full, that'll be part of the end of the arc and something beautiful to behold. But yeah, I kind of like that.
Do you, when you're watching this section where Ahsoka keeps dancing around the truth, she agrees to stay on if Rafa is okay with it. Rafa asks Ahsoka about her skills. She says, I only have useful ones. So she kind of keeps talking around her own, Ahsoka's own truth. Do you feel a desire to have Ahsoka tell the truth? Do you think she should?
I do want to see her tell the truth. I want to see that matter in the sense of having specific Trace on her side and having Rafa come around and have it be the idea that they're like looking at the Jedi with a different perspective from their end. She's seeing things from a different perspective outside of the Jedi Order, seeing what happens and how things matter and all those kind of things we've talked about. But to have them kind of go after the fact, oh, you did that, you are that, and we have a different view of that, being a Jedi.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, so you think Ahsoka is holding back from not wanting them to see her through that prism?
I think number one, I think it's safety protection and just she's got to keep that under wraps, as we know. But I think there it could be one of those buzzwords. Well, I, you know, even if you were to say, even now, she's like, well, here's the thing. I'm a Jedi, or I was a Jedi, or I was a Padawan, or whatever. I was up there. yes, it would color her in a certain light to them, and she doesn't want that now, especially now. Definitely early on, it's all based out of protection, that we know. But as trust grows, I don't think right now Ahsoka's consciously being like, I'm not going to tell them I'm a Jedi so they can have a positive view of me. I just think that it's factoring into the story as it rolls out.
Yeah, yeah. I think she would definitely will tell eventually, or probably show. Ahsoka's going to be a good writer in that way. She's going to show, not tell with the Force. But it really struck me when I was thinking through this that Ahsoka probably doesn't have enough perspective herself yet. So I wonder if that is kind of the arc that we're going to, of like, she hasn't come to terms with this, so she can't explain it to somebody else.
Bingo. That's a big point. I really like that. That she eventually might, again, eventually I think that this will come out. I think it's where we're headed, but like, what does that even mean? What does that mean to me now is something she's still going through.
Yeah. Yeah, like almost she can't. Yeah. Like if she ends up using literal skills, but also philosophy of the Jedi to save them, to get them out of this trouble with the Pike Syndicate in a way that Ahsoka feels proud of, then maybe that will unlock the like, ah, I get it. This is why I left the Jedi. This is what I'm still proud of. And now I can express my truth to you because I understand it.
I think that's exactly well said. That's exactly what I hope happens.
Awesome. I am hopeful for that, too. Let's move along to, I think, probably for hardcore fans, one of the most thrilling parts of this episode, where Trace pilots the Silver Angel into a military-only lane with the great low-altitude armored transports, the Republic gunships. Ahsoka gets real concerned about it. We get to see Yularen. We get to see Anakin and Ahsoka interact after a fashion. Let's talk about all this. In all of this, what jumped out at you?
What jumped out is it's starting to happen, and then you hear Yularen's voice, and it's just kind of fun, right? And you're like, ooh, what's Ahsoka going to do? But the moment it cuts inside, and Yularen, he is in the Piet pose, and he's over a worker, and Anakin's over his shoulder, and the look, and I got excited, just as a longtime Star Wars fan, and just on the surface, and then you can go into what it means, but yeah, right there, that was my first moment of just like, oh, we're doing this.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I nerded out so hard, it was so great. The second I heard Yularen's voice, I was just like, yes, yes, because I really like Yularen. I've always found him kind of fun and crusty and interesting, and you know, those little moments would pop up in early Clone Wars episodes where you'd be like, I guess the Jedi are going to do this. Fine. And then you go on and learn that he easily transitioned from the Republic to the Empire. All makes sense to him. That's great. And that he's all in. He's in the Death Star meeting. So I've always liked Yularen. I thought he was a well-developed character, and it's really believable that we make this transition. And I was excited just to see or hear him, and knowing he has a relationship with Ahsoka, but I felt like this scene was like, he doesn't know he's about to transition to the Empire, but he already has. Because like, what is he doing? It's so imperial of like, not like the Republic wasn't like this, but the way it's heightened of like, they are not following the protocols. I should be doing military things, but I'm going to take time and resources to arrest them and take their licenses. And just like, you total just officious a-hole.
Yeah. Vicious animal. That's awesome. Yeah, I like that. It's already there. It's already in his heart.
Yeah, he's, you know, already an Imperial.
Yeah,
he's already willing to rat people out into the ISB will one day run.
I was just gonna say, he's already in the ISB. He already is there.
He's already doing it. Yeah. And then the Ahsoka Anakin sensing one another moment. Did that hit you on an emotional level?
Oh, it really did. It hit me on, you know, what we know has happened, what we know is to come, and that Anakin feels these things. And then I'm fascinated. I definitely want to get your opinion and bounce this back to you here. Like, what does this mean for Anakin / Vader that, you know, he keeps these little secrets? I know Vader keeps little secrets in the Emperor, and he's got stuff going on in his head and during his meditations and isolations, but that this is a trait that goes back to there, that not that Anakin would be like, hey, wait, Yularen, I think Ahsoka's on there. I wouldn't expect that, but just like, what a little interesting wrinkle to Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
He knows this. He knows this. What does it mean to him?
Yeah. I think, just emotionally, like, I literally put my hand to my heart watching it, because it is that tragedy of them being, you know, we're spending so much time with Ahsoka, you know, where she feels like she literally can't even fly near what used to be her home. And, you know, her teacher at Skywalker Academy was so close to her, and seeing that they were still that connected and using that traditional Star Wars language to show that connection was just really emotionally powerful. But for Anakin, there's something powerful in seeing him let her go. Because there's a part where it's like, yeah, of course, Anakin doesn't blame her for what happens. He did pretty well in that whole debacle. He worked hard to prove her innocent, but he still feels guilty about it. So on one hand, it's like, oh, that makes sense. Of course, he'd just let her go about her business. But when you think of Anakin, the first thing you think of is not peacefully letting go of something he cares about. And the idea that he's just like, I don't want her bothered by Yularen, but I'm sure he'd like to see her. I'm sure he'd like to know how she's doing. But he just lets her go. And is that a moment that Anakin could have learned from and could have done more with, of letting someone he loves go?
Absolutely. Yeah, great point. And what a, I don't know, dare I say, graduation moment for Ahsoka, to know that, you know, she doesn't know it fully. I think she senses something's up there. Probably senses Anakin in a way. Just that idea of you are on your own, and you kind of need to be, and you kind of earn that right to be on your own.
Yes.
And for Anakin, to your point about the lesson, that's powerful too, but it also shades. I'm thinking of other moments. I mean, Ahsoka feels this the other way around, right? Like, wait, that bad guy might be, that seems like Anakin. I like in Lords of the Sith, As Vader crashes to the ground on that ship there, and he has that flashback to Snips. It's a feeling. It's a connection. So it's a testament to that. But I love what you're saying about him, because you're right. If you read the facial expression, it doesn't feel like he's like, great, I'm going to go get my own ship and follow her. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he does, but I don't think he does. It's not played like that. It is played of, she's on her own, and I'm not going to interfere with her out of respect for what she did and my support for that decision in a way.
Yeah. It feels very much like somebody who has been asked to give a loved one space.
Yeah.
And like in this very epic way, it's this epic romantic space. I see you're online, but I'm not going to DM you. Like you need your space. You need to be doing whatever you're doing. And I let you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good points.
You mentioned a bunch of other great Star Wars moments that this evokes for you. When I watched it the second time, I felt like it was like a very strong, direct Star Wars poetry of the Return of the Jedi scene, with Pia almost stopping Tidarium, with almost stopping the shuttle that Luke was on, and Vader sensing that Luke was there, and Anakin. You know, so we got Pia Yularen, who are just very directly going, we've got a problem with this ship. We're interacting with the ship. And then Anakin Vader kind of wandering over and going, what's that ship about? Actually, no, let it go.
Yeah. Where is that shuttle going?
Yeah.
Yeah. Love every, I mean, it's down to almost some of the lines. It's down to beat for beat, for sure.
Yeah.
Shot for shot, and in some sequences. Loved it.
Yeah, might be some blocking similarities there.
Yeah.
Any other... Oh, actually, I wanted to ask about this, because there have been timeline discussions that have been seen. People ask Matt Martin in particular on Twitter, suggesting that maybe these Clone Wars episodes aren't in... from the Season 7 are not in linear order, which I did wonder about that, too, because... We've got it established in the Bad Batch arc that Anakin is dealing with those sieges on the Outer Rims that he is allegedly just coming back from in Revenge of the Sith. Whereas this feels like he's on Coruscant kind of doing basic, you know, mobilization or something. What's your take on the timeline?
I think in my mind it as 3PO would say, here we go again. it like kind of has to be that.
Yeah.
And I'm not one that gets held up on that, you know. But yeah, if I was Padme and I found out, you know, you're just hanging out with Yularen and you didn't even so much come by and say, hi, pick me up something from Dexter's on the way home. Like, I'd be upset.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, like I said, kind of has to. I wouldn't get held up on it if it isn't, but kind of has to.
So if the truth is, if this arc finishes and Filoni and the Star Wars keepers of the canon all say, yeah, timeline-wise, this Ahsoka arc comes before the Bad Batch arc, would that annoy you on any level? Or would you just say, hey, that is in the grand tradition of the Clone Wars that the episodes are in dramatic order, not in, you know, linear order?
I'd be fine with it because I'm fine with I've never really gone out of my way to watch the Clone Wars series in timeline order. It was confusing the first, and I understand some of the reasons. Don't fully understand all the reasons why. People can tweet at us as to why. I at this point don't really care. But for this season, it's fine. It's fine because I'm just thinking of it as just if you're programming these episodes and you want to start with a bang, what's more exciting than clones fighting?
Yeah.
You know? It's the Clone Wars. Come on in. You don't want to start with a think piece. And I'm okay with that. And now, with the power of Disney Plus, you can watch them in the order you want.
I like how you have created even a little commercial voice, a commercial for the Clone Wars. Make them your own. Put them in your order. Let's move on to Kessel. We go to Kessel, we see the forested area with the castle, we have a dinner with King Yoruba's major domo, Kanash Locke, then we go over to the actual spice mining slavery area, we see a Zygerian, known in Clone Wars for being slavers, they pick up the spice, have some debate about the Republic maybe shutting down slavery, would they or wouldn't they? You said you were really excited about Kessel. In all of this, what was grabbing you?
All of it, quite frankly. The first shot, which you know directly now connects to Solo, and it's interesting because a lot of these Clone Wars stories were already in the can, so to speak. At least the stories. Clearly, they've made changes. Trace and Rafa, new characters. So, what came first, chicken or the egg? I don't know if the makers of Solo went to Dave Filoni and went, "Hey, we're going to Kessel. You got any shots of that? Any concept art laying around?" But they might have. You don't know. But regardless, I don't care about the how and the what. It's always the why. And why do we see this? Because it connects the galaxy, connects Solo. And it means to me, Solo's not too far from this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like 10 years. Compared to other things in Star Wars. So right from the first shot, I just was like, you know, obviously Kessel's been mentioned, but like, it's like, we're really going to Kessel. Like we're really living in it. And I just love that. And then where it goes, like I said, the Temple of Doom kind of feeling of the palace and the dark things going underneath, but the questions, tough questions, for Ahsoka to kind of just like, yeah, I have no answer as to why the Republic would, you know, why the Republic didn't do this. I don't know all that. I love, you talk about meta moments. Ahsoka says, now this looks like the castle from the stories. And almost us like, yeah, it's all one here. It's the other side of it. It's a complete picture of Kessel, and that's what excited me.
Yeah. I think definitely just like the visuals of that, like, yes, I've been playing this, you know, not that exact spot, but been playing Kessel in Battlefront 2, and I know that particular yellow, orange, you know, misty color so well from that, you know, Kessel goes back to 3PO talking about it in A New Hope. So we've got this strong fan association with it that I think has this great energy with, especially for Rafa. Like, if Rafa kind of wants to pretend that she can, you know, run with the big kids, and she wants to be, you know, not a gangster, but a mover and a shaker, a smuggler, a shady business person, a la Lando, going to Kessel's like the big time, right?
Oh, that's a great way to look at it. Yeah, it's like a big swing for the fence, man. You want to get in there with the best pitcher to get a hit. Yeah, this is a proving ground for sure.
Yeah,
you're playing with legends.
Yeah, going to, I thought about it from you talking about the why of it. Because as fans, you can just go, Kessel, cool. And here, factually, we know that's where Spice is. But you get into the why. Why does Rafa think that she has, that this is great and that she's really moving up in the world? Is because it's not just random. It is what Kessel means in the galaxy, into the characters that live in that galaxy.
100%. It ain't. What's his name? Pinto. It ain't Pinto.
Yeah. This ain't Pinto. You mentioned liking the dinner scene. I really liked. Yeah. It looked like it was out of King Arthur kind of with their little goblets and their big turkey legs. what did you like about the actual dinner scene?
I just love the very clear statement on the opulence versus what we know. I think, it's funny to the moment you sit down there and you're like, oh, okay, another part of Kessel. I think longtime fans or even, recent fans who love Solo, you kind of know what's going on there. Again, going to 3PO saying it in New Hope. So to be, it's like we're sitting at that dinner table waiting for the shoe to drop and to have kind of Trace and Rafa like, turkey legs are great. But Ahsoka's us in that scene.
Yeah.
It just kind of connected me. And I keep using this word fun today. I must look up other words today. But it just was really interesting to watch. Because, what's happening. But this is where Ahsoka's knowledge is put best use. Like Trace to me and Rafa really kind of were in over their heads by this point.
Yeah.
And then when the server like drops a tray, really well played moment. Comedy and deep meaning to it, and I like that. I liked all of it. I love dinner scenes in Star Wars. They're underrated.
Yeah. Empire Strikes Back is such a tease, We want to see that dinner scene on Cloud City all the way through, and I know there have been many parodies, but I like that Trace and Rafa are riding high. They think that this is evidence that, look, we're being invited to a palace. Look at this sweet deal I set up, and then to have that contrast where Ahsoka says the thing that you should not say in a lush castle that is cover for, slavery and drug running. He's like, well, spice is sometimes made to use other things. And that's when the server drops the tray that like the server is so shocked that like somebody said the emperor has no clothes. You're not supposed to say that here at all.
Yoink, yoink.
Yoink, yoink. Then we get to the reality where we do see they think those are droids because they're so rich. Trace does. And they're like, no, those are slaves. And I think it's Rafa who says, well, no, they can't be slaves. The Republic would shut that down. And Ahsoka says, yeah, you'd think they would.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? Did it come across like Ahsoka's already been thinking about this a bit?
Absolutely. And it comes across as these are maybe some of the unspoken reasons she was came to her decision to walk away. I think there's a lot of bigger decisions at that moment while she's staring at the all-star team of Jedi telling her, that was your Jedi trial. Nope, I'm out of here. But this might have been something that you get the sense along the way. We've seen a lot of it because we spent a lot of time with her in Clone Wars. And a lot of the lessons she learned from, I'm thinking of the Padme stuff. We always talk about the Mina Monteri stuff. Lessons learned along the way comes to this moment, and it ties, it goes to what you're talking about at the top of the show. And for, Qui-Gon Jinn, who is probably had that on his heart. Who do I choose, the kid or the mother? I can't do both. Why can't I do both? I know I can't do both. I love that kind of reflecting back on something. It's just we accept in the story. Yeah, it is slavery in the galaxy, but the Republic is good. They would do this. And a rare moment for Rafa, who has every reason to be cynical down there in 1313, just be like, well, no. They do it. For Ahsoka to be like, you think, means other people have probably thought that too.
Yeah.
Inside the Jedi Order.
Yeah. I mean, even Qui-Gon saying, I didn't come here to free slaves. He seems a little like, I wish I was. So I thought that was powerful from Ahsoka. Moving along, we go and have their meeting with the Pike. They have the debate. The big moment of the show. The debate about what they're going to do. This is where Ahsoka finally finds out that they're actually going to deliver this to the Pike crime syndicate. And Soka makes the argument that maybe they could just take the spice and bring it to somebody who will actually make medicine for it to have a positive impact on the galaxy. Rafa really wants to continue with the plan. And then somebody, I can't remember if it's Ahsoka or Rafa, brings up that the Pikes will take, I think it's Ahsoka, says that the Pikes will take our lives, they'll take your ship. And Trace really panics about them taking her ship. That seems to be the motivation here. And in classic Han Solo fashion, she dumps the spice.
Yeah, love the moment. That ship represents so much to her. The freedoms that she's earned, the potential for freedoms that she's yet to experience. I mean, it's hers. It's hers. And I kind of like it. Again, mistakes. Mistakes being made all around. But some of those mistakes come from an understandable point,
yeah,
point of view.
Did it affect you emotionally, the stakes of seeing the seeing her drop the spice and knowing, like, you're in really big trouble, and that seemed like kind of a rash, immature thing to do?
Dropping the spice. Sorry, you cut out on my end, so I missed your question.
Oh, yeah.
We are recording remotely again, people.
We are, remotely, but close in our hearts. No, I think you got the gist of it, of just how much it actually affected you to see her drop the spice.
In that, like, protective, no, not anger.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's something to me that the stakes were kind of successfully raised by Ahsoka constantly recognizing that these are very high stakes. These are very serious people, and sensing for Ahsoka, and I have limited resources to deal with it. And both of you don't know how incredibly dangerous this is. And then that Trace just does that so rashly in the middle of the debate. There's something about it that's just, it's so specifically not a knowledge of the world. Like, at this point, yes, they're developing, like, the three of them are kind of connecting in this sisterly way, like, because Rafa and Ahsoka haven't been liking or trusting each other, but then they kind of turn on Trace and are talking in unison of, like, you did what? That there's almost this whole, like, sister familial vibe developing now between all three of them in what Trace does by dumping the spice seems like something a sibling would do, where they, you know, get mad and they eat the last piece of pie, you know? In the contrast between that kind of, like, I got mad and I panicked and I did something that my sisters don't approve of, versus you dumped spice for the incredibly large murderous crime syndicate. We're all going to die. That contrast really worked for me.
I love, it does for me too. I love the line that was from Soka, the spice gave us options. And it's like, sometimes if you're learning the bigger world, you don't know, you know, that your immediate gut reaction, action, you don't know what that affects. And that is a smart lesson. To make it a smaller lesson for, like you said, for Trace and Ralph versus the big picture of Kessel and Pikes and smuggling.
Yeah, yeah. And we know the dangers of dumping the spice from Han Solo. Moving on. So basically the final scene, we meet the Pike Marg Krim, who has appeared in the novelization of the unproduced Clone Wars arc, Dark Disciple. And Ahsoka has come up with a big plan, and it is to basically Jedi mind trick him very quietly. It almost works until the Majordomo Fife gets suspicious. And in a burst of huge action for this episode, blasts open the empty cargo. I really like Rafa just kind of yells out, like, oh, no, it's empty. Must have been Kessel.
I did, too, because I thought, oh, man, I would love to see Pikes versus the Royal Kessel family there in a subplot.
Yeah. Yeah, and we still might, since we didn't actually see King Yoruba yet. That should be very interesting. So did you like Ahsoka's plan? Did you like that her plan was, I will try to Jedi mind trick him? What did you think of all that?
I liked it. I made a note that Ahsoka uses the Force kind of Qui-Gon Jinn style, kind of, you know, we're not going to, you know, we talk often about what causes the Jedi to get involved, but I love that Qui-Gon uses the Force on the chance cube, and Ahsoka's kind of inserting, she's not going to let this go the way it's going to go. She's going to influence it a little bit here, and I consider that using the Force powers for good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we talked about recently on one of our main show episodes, where we talked about Force powers, about the debate about how ethical is a Jedi mind trick. And this seemed incredibly ethical. Like, well, instead of getting us all murdered because we're not running drugs well for this crime boss, what if I just use a gentle mind trick to get us out of actual conflict?
I mean, yeah, I'd consider that some defense.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, any other thoughts on the episode? Any other characters or moments or planets or anything you wanted to discuss?
I love the connections. We talked about Kessel, just even the shots of Kessel connecting it to Solo. Mark Kim showing up. Again, the connecting to the novelization. Those little tiny things are always fun. I know we all want those connections, but when used correctly, and I think most of them in modern Star Wars are, they just really help flesh out the galaxy and make all the little corners connect. And I really like that part of the episode as well.
Yeah, yeah. To know all of these different characters, you know, walk these same paths at different times for different reasons.
Right.
Yeah, it makes it feel also connected. For me, little things in that dinner, I really like the design of the cocktail glasses.
Yeah. Oh, you would.
I
yes.
would. Yeah. Yeah. I want one of those. Put those on the market there. Star Wars. Yeah. And I really liked Rafa's delivery to Ahsoka when she's saying, "How does she know so much? How do you know so much?" Because it's funny, but it's also this sort of celebration of Ahsoka is incredibly experienced and knowledgeable. And that way she has to basically keep going like, I heard a story. I read about it on Wikipedia. What? I know a lot about the galaxy. I'm well read. Yeah. I'm a great student, and not like I'm a Jedi. Yeah. I fight these people. Like
I read it on Facebook. Someone posted an article. Reddit.
Yeah, it's Reddit threads. It's That's how I know all this stuff. It's lots about the Pikes on Reddit. Yeah. Do you have desires, predictions, suspicions for the next two episodes of this arc?
You mentioned not seeing the King Yoruba yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're going to the foot of the king, and more lessons about what is really going on. But also, I don't know. I'm hoping maybe he's a nice king who just has a bunch of slavery going on in his land. I don't know. But regardless, I just want to see Ahsoka not just revealing herself to be a Jedi, not just using those powers, but choosing the reason why and what it means to her growth as we go towards what we do believe will be the Siege of Mandalore to close this series, timeline or not. You know what I mean? Like, I want this to continue to be a four-part. Trace and Rafa are so great, and there's so much with Trace and Rafa, so I'm not putting them on the shelf. I want them. But as focus on Ahsoka, such a big character, to learn, I think we're learning so much of what it means to be a real Jedi, what's at the core of this Jedi Order. And I want it all kind of boiled down into the lessons and action she takes the next few episodes.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think in terms of Trace and Rafa's arcs, I wonder if we will pick up on this thread that's represented by Rafa saying, well, the Republic wouldn't allow slavery. If Trace and Rafa end up with sort of sadly we have seen the true state of the galaxy and we kind of despair for it, even more, like, things are bad on level 1313, but a lot of the galaxy is in a bad place. You know, would sort of position them as heroes who are ready to have a negative view of the way the Palpatine has, you know, taken the galaxy. Mm. And then for Ahsoka, I am hoping, not because I need to see big action. I love the big action. Mm. It's cool. But if she really tries to negotiate her way out of this as best she can, try some more mind tricks, tries, you know, to sneak away and can't, and really gets down to the point of Trace and Rafa are going to be killed. And she has to use her unleash with her full power as total defense. And if kind of going through her own arc of making those choices, like you were saying, gets her to some sort of peace with her personal philosophy of being a Force user and the meaning of the light side and what the Jedi are striving to versus what they failed, I would really love it if that could come from the action of these crime lords are going to kill these basically innocent people.
That's big. That's heavy, man. I like that.
Yeah. I hope so.
I like that.
I hope so. It should be really interesting. There are two episodes left. I did some more reading to freshen up on everything that's been out there about the Clone Wars, from the animatics to different little things that Filoni has revealed at conventions. And I think a lot of this arc is fairly new territory. So it's really exciting to not know exactly where he's going with this, other than it seems to be really about positioning Ahsoka to have her perspective on the Jedi and the Clone Wars and the legacy of it all.
Just one more big giant step for Ahsoka to be herself and become herself.
That's right. Any action figure that you would want from this episode?
Definitely want palace servant with flipping tray action.
You want the Jerry Lewis in Star Wars action figure.
Yeah. And it's made with little metal just so it clinks when it hits the floor.
Yeah, circles, right? Shing, 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 shing.
Yeah.
I would happily buy that. But Marg Krim, I thought, had a great design. That big old weird pike face and great delivery.
Yeah, Steven Stanton doing it again.
Yeah.
He's a Clone Wars utility player. So yeah.
I love,
I take that figure too.
After he had Ben Mind Trick and Fife was like, I'm going to go check that out. And he's, sure.
I was watching that the second time this morning and just was like, he's still kind of like, what? Yeah. All right. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It seemed like Jedi Mind Trick was like a little Jedi get him high trick.
What?
Yeah. I'm just thinking peaceful thoughts. All right. We close out every episode of the Clone Wars Report by sharing what the moral of this podcast is. We know what the moral of Deal or No Deal is. But, Ken, what is the moral of this episode of the Clone Wars Report?
The moral of this episode is, if you put too much faith in one kind of remote recording technology and it fails, you must then learn to use other things, sometimes too late.
It's a very, very honest and practical bit of information. Truly, today, you and I have stepped into a larger world of remote recording. That is our episode. We will see you next week for another episode of Clone Wars Report.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.